see if I can make the microphone work. I don't think it's going to happen, though. It doesn't sound like it's kicking in. I was asked to preach tonight, and I was delighted to accept, so thank you all for coming out to listen to another sermon on Sunday. I will confess, the second thing that stood out to me in the readings is from the passage in Romans, where Paul writes that the Spirit prays with us with sighs. I like groans better, with groans too deep for words. I thought, great, I can just sit down then. And then I realized it would be many of your second sermons, and you might not laugh at that joke. So we'll go with the first thing that stood out for me. I believe in Christian unity. I believe that there are times when we are most united in our prayer, and I was very excited to get a chance to preach on that. And then I opened the text, and I read from Exodus, and I thought, oh my God, why was this picked? Because Moses' song and Miriam's song, well, beautiful and joyful, and there are a few images I love more in the Bible than the idea of Miriam and the women dancing on the safe edge of the Red Sea. I know what comes before them, and I know what comes after them. Moses and the Hebrews are fleeing from slavery and oppression, from human and divine infanticide and attempted genocide, you could argue. And they are going into a wandering in the desert for 40 years, where mostly the people complain, and God forgives them for complaining a lot, which is always good to remember on our worst days. And when they get to the promised land, they will find that it is already home to a people that they will try to kill. This is a song of joy caught in the middle of an awfully large amount of death, threat, and bloodshed. So I went, and as a good student, I'm a recovering overachieving student, I went and I read the material on the website about all of this, which situates this in the people of the Caribbean. And I thought, oh, they didn't pick this in ignorance. They picked this in knowledge. Colonialism in the Caribbean started in the 1600s, and you can argue that it has never ended. Not really. They are a people who have been enslaved, and a people who have come there through slavery. They have often traded one oppressor for the next oppressor, and their freedom has been won despite threats through bloodshed. They know why Miriam and the women dance, and why Moses sings this very long song with the people of Israel, despite everything that has come and everything that lies ahead of those people. They don't sing this song because freedom is complete and total. They sing this song in shock and amazement that anything has happened that could be called freedom. See, in Exodus, this song literally happens immediately after they have walked through the Red Sea. And if you remember this story well, and many of you do, I trust, potentially futilely, but I trust that many of you know this story well, right before the sea parts, the people turn to Moses and what Moses hopefully took as the appropriate sign of what was ahead of him. And they say to Moses, did you not think there were enough graves for us in Egypt that you brought us out here so that we could die? And the story immediately after Miriam's song is the first time they run out of water and they turn to Moses and they say, was it not good enough for you that we were to die in Egypt as slaves, that we must come out here to die of thirst? But somewhere, somewhere between the fear of death from Pharaoh's army and the fear of dying of thirst. They know freedom. And in my hopeful moments, I like to think that as they are complaining throughout those 40 years, as they are building idols and whining about water and meat and how much food they are getting, all of which will happen a lot, some part of them remembers this moment on the bank of the Red Sea, where they are safe for the first time in generations, and they could sing. And that in that moment, as our song said a little bit ago, these people who were not yet completely free could dream dreams. What dreams are we dreaming? Do we know how we are not yet free? We are the people of God. We are united in prayer, if in nothing else. But not all of us are free. There are people, even in our courts here, unjustly tried or set free by miracles of jurisprudence that I do not yet understand. There are people, even here, who are not free from hunger or thirst or addiction or fear of deportation. And when we are serious about the gospel, about the God who loves us all, we have to remember that none of us are free until all of us are free. So the question I have for you, as we listen to a spirit who prays with us, even when there are no words for our prayers, are we following that spirit to those who have lost the ability to pray for their freedom? Are we following to those who are hungry and lonely and scared and need us most? Because our freedom is caught up in theirs. And even though in this world freedom may never be perfect, when we help them be a little more free, perhaps we can stand, even metaphorically, with Moses and Miriam on the banks of the Red Sea and rejoice for a few moments. Amen.